All right. Are you all ready to talk about what has got to be my most favorite topic on the planet? The answer is yes. We are going to talk about high performance happiness. And it's really about what does that mean to you? So you want you to feel like this more of the time. How do we feel like this more of the time, right? Because that was the idea when we started. We're going to do great work. We're going to do it better. We're going to do it our way. We're going to have amazing finances and freedom. We're going to love what we do. It's going to be amazing. And then one day you're like, gosh, this is a lot of work. It did not work out exactly the way that I anticipated. There was not a lot of paperwork in my vision or trying to find the right clients. Like in my head, they were just there and I was an awesome advisor and everything worked out magically with pixie dust. Right? And it's not pixie dust, but there is a process for creating what I like to call high performance happiness for yourself, which is what we all, in my experience, working with clients and founders for 30 years, is that what everybody in some way, shape, or form wants is the ability to show up at work, to kick-ass work, be awesome, have impact, do value, be financially successful as a result of that, and then go home and live an amazing life. You're present for your family, you're in an amazing marriage, your relationship, your kids think, you know, oh, I've got this amazing parent, your health and your fitness are awesome. Like, oh, it's all so perfect in our heads. Great. How's that working out for you? Yeah, that was the conversation I had to have with myself at one point. I'm like, in my head, it's awesome, but in real life, it's not feeling like this. It's feeling like struggle. And look, being in business for yourself or building a client base is real work. I don't want to take away from that. But what I want to talk to you about today is what are the factors that create high performance happiness? Because it's not some secret sauce. People aren't born smarter or better looking. There's not some secret club. Like, what is it that separates people who can create this kind of quality of life and experience for themselves and people who don't? Because that's the roadmap to change. So step one is, you know, you guys know I love vision and warm and fluffy and all of that, but I am all about the science and the research because I want there to be truth, right? And the truth is, according to the studies, and there's a lot of information I could share, but I'm just giving you some highlights. Top performers, right? People who are above average at what they do, right? In the way that they do it. Are you ready for this? I want you to understand the magnitude of this. 55 times less likely to start projects they don't finish. Now, this is the interactive part. You guys have your emojis. How many of you, if we're being radically honest, start projects that you don't finish? Thumbs up if you're honest. Everyone else is a fibber, but okay. Right? Like, Adam, you might, right? Like, we might get some leeway there, right? Because we've actually learned this stuff. Imagine if you were 55 times more focused and you followed through on all the stuff that you committed to doing. What would the net result be in your business and your life? If Edwin, everything you'd ever decided to do, 95% of it you actually focused on and followed through on. And what would happen if that were your personal data set? If 95% of what James did, he went out and executed, what would the result be? So I want you to get clear, where is focus and follow through? We talked about this in the overcoming overwhelm session. What are you focused on? Because we get focused on too much. And we're going to talk about that. Top performers are 21 times, you guys understand the magnitude of 21 and 55 times, less likely to experience tasks falling through the cracks. How many of you have ever experienced tasks falling through the cracks? It's the great frustration of owners, right? Like, how could this happen? Right? Because we don't have our systems, our people, process, and platform wired, and we're 17 times less likely to have an inbox full of unread emails. Now, imagine if those were the only three things you got better at this year. Like, you did no lessons. You just paid your 10 grand to show up and do better. What would it be worth? Drop a number in the chat. What would it be worth to you if you actually got it together? Focused on a few things, did them, nothing fell through the cracks, and you weren't spending all your time in distractions and email. What would that be worth to you? Dollars and time and freedom. A lot, right? Can we agree? Like a lot, right? Way more than the price of admission, many times over if we follow through. So the question is, how do we elevate our work, our wealth, and our well-being in ways that actually work? So let's talk about what is high performance happiness. So defined, what is it? Definition and meaning: working at or above an above average standard, succeeding at or above those standards over a period of time. Now, I'm going to just call out that standards mean everyone else, and everyone else is a comparison, and comparisons are the enemy of awesome. They are just awful. Like, it's how we break ourselves down. And it also creates contrast that lets us know what's possible so that we go, ooh, I don't like this, I want that. When you see me living that way, or Adam living that way, or someone else living that way, some part of you goes, that's possible for me. Like, how do I step into that space is what this session is really about. Happiness in the traditional formula is broken. And that's what a lot of you are experiencing. I know, because I have lived through it. I manage it constantly. Happiness is not on the other side of success. It's so cliche. Happiness is the journey. And if we're honest with ourselves, like, I sold a company for millions of dollars. Do you know how excited I was? I was pretty excited. Do you know how long that lasted? 3 days. And then back to work. The kids were still doing, you know, throwing macaroni at the dinner table. There was still, like, life still happened. Right. The difference is, like, I thought I was going to turn this corner, and it's called conditional living. And it's the most dangerous thing that we do, which is, if only fill in the blank, I had more money, my spouse did this, my kids were better, whatever, my practice ran differently, then I would be happy. And what the science shows is that's a lie. It's a fundamental broken kind of enigma of our culture. This hustle culture is, if I do, if I achieve, if I turn that corner, then I will have peace. I will have happiness. I will have freedom. I will have contentment. How's that working for everybody? Right? You've all turned a few of those corners. And yes, life does incrementally get better and more comfortable, but it's about our state of being. So just be on the lookout for conditional living, which says that when something is different or better, or a person is different or better, then I will be happy, then I will be okay. And that is a paradigm in which you can never feel succeed, like you're succeeding or even being fulfilled, because it's always around an invisible corner. And that's one of those strategies that our brain and our culture play on us. It's the opposite of living in the moment. So I want you all to pause right now. Y'all know I'm a fan of the belly breathing. So we're going to take some deep belly breaths. Let's do three. And I want you to get really in touch with what's really working in your situation in your life right now. What's really working for you? What do you have to be happy and joyful and grateful over? You can pay your rent. You have a good relationship, right? You have the ability to improve your situation. Like, what can you get really feel good about? Because we spend about 99% of our time not in that place. So one of the things that we can do is learn how to evoke feel-good feelings, which we're going to talk about. That's the state piece. And here's why it's matter. There's a great book. It's in the end, so we'll give it back to you, called The Happiness Advantage by Sean Anker. And it really talks about that the broken model of happiness, if we get this then, versus the personal model of happiness, which is I am because I choose, and everything else is an outcome that I create from that place. When you operate from a place of happiness, what we call success state here at Limitless, right? Being above the line, if you're familiar with that terminology, means that you're happy, you're productive, you're empowered, everything is figure outable. And from this state, intelligence rises, no joke, IQ points actually go up, creativity rises. When have you all had your best, most inspiring ideas? When you were happy or when you were funky? When you were like in the flow zone or when you were feeling awful? Like, come on, like, when does that happen, right? Our job is to create that flow state. Science and the research says you're 31% more productive when you're positive than when you're stressed. You're 31% better at sales. That might actually matter. 19 doctors and professionals, right? Totally true for you. 19% more accurate with diagnosis, because purpose and connection is what gives our life meaning. Like, what is it that truly makes us happy? It is not the number on your P&L. It is not the number of assets on your custodian statement. Those are benchmarks and milestones that we tell ourselves will create experiences, conditions, or resources that empower and foster happy, but they are not happy. And do not make the mistake of confusing the two. Happiness is a state of being that allows you to create the outcome that you want in your life because you're not governed and overruled by all those stories and the strategies that we talk about right from that negative state. So the key to high performance happiness, first and foremost, is owning your state. And I don't know if you guys remember this, but I swear we need to make postcards or something, Allison. Does anybody remember the triangle from the mindset conversation? What are the three things you're working with all the time? Strategy, story, and state. You guys can see that. It's very eloquent. It's like an iceberg. Below the line is story and state. It's how you're feeling. It's what's going on in your headspace. It's your heart space. Am I stressed? Am I empowered? Strategy is what you do about it, right? Do you avoid your spouse? Do you do busyness? Do you drink too much at night? Do you, you know, have a crazy exercise routine? Because that's what keeps you focused, right? Strategies are positive and negative, and they are defined by our stories and our state. So when we solve problems or we try to deal with situations from a below the line place, our strategies tend to be below the line. We react, we create more problems, we avoid the conversations. We don't deal with what we need to deal with. When they're positive, we do. We have the conversation, we raise the fees, we get clear, we make the change, we know what we need to account for, and we take action because we're aware that however uncomfortable it is, it's what's standing between us and the next level of success that we're trying to create. So if you just draw a picture of this triangle and put it on a left post-its on your desk, it's going to remind you that this is the work that we are doing. This is the personal work. What's my story, or what are my stories that are holding me back, right? We're always working on over the year. What's the state that I'm in, which is what we're talking about. How do we create that state for ourselves so that we don't, that we have positive strategies, not negative ones, right? That we're figuring out what goes on the success shifter that's going to put us in that place, not avoiding it with TV or work or alcohol or whatever. Like, those are all the strategies that we as humans love to use. And it's a dangerous cycle. So you are generally going to be above the line, below the line, or neutral. Neutral in your brain and biology is called stasis, right? Homeostasis. Everything's neutral. That's how you should wake up. Sometimes we don't, which tells us, like, if you wake up with your head spinning, it means that that stuff's already started before you've begun, right? There's some stuff to deal with. You got junk in the trunk. We have a hard time sleeping at night, right? If you can't stay focused. If you say you want to do things, but you don't follow through on them, it tells us that there's work in our headspace that we need to focus on because we're not showing up in a state that is clear, productive, empowered, and aligned with the goals that we've set for ourselves. So that's how you know there's work to do there. And by the way, diagnosis human, that's pretty much most people on the planet, unless you're a psychopath, according to the research. And I don't think we have any of you here this year. So good for us. If you do, feel free to drop out anytime. All right. So let's talk about the forces at work. You have three forces at work in your life, creating the level of success at any given time. And if you understand them, it makes it a lot easier to marshal them and take agency over them. One, your unconscious mind. You join Limitless, so you now know that you have a curtain in your brain, and behind that curtain, your subconscious, unconscious mind is where 95% of your stuff happens. 95%. Our job is to turn off that autopilot because we're operating with our survival systems, our negativity hardwiring. Bonus question, how many thoughts a day do we have and what percentage of them are negative? Anybody remember? Come on, I got to do epic shit, Yeti, for the first person. Come on, 60,000 Dimitris on it. That's right. What percent? 80% of them are negative. It's actually, they think, closer to 90 or 95, but right, we just want to make sure that we're being conservative. Imagine if 80% of the thoughts running through your head were positive. What if, Dimitri, it was, you're awesome, you got this, you're a badass, your clients are lucky to have you, you know your stuff, you are focused and empowered, and you get your shit done. Like, what if that was running through the track of your brain all day long instead of A, nothing, because I'm so busy doing, I'm not aware, or B, negative BS? What would the difference be? So I want you to check in on that. Two, your self-conscious mind. And this is something that I want us to really talk about and for you to be aware of, because we talked about the stories behind the curtain. This is the front of the curtain. This is you on the stage. You've all heard of YOLO. You only live once. You guys know I'm a big fan of that, right? Make the most of it. You've all heard of FOMO, fear of missing out. Who's heard of FOPO? So in caveman times, what was the number one threat? As humans, what was that survival state designed to keep us alive from? Things that could eat us, lions and tigers and saber-tooths and whatever, right? Like that was our number one threat. So society and culture have evolved far faster than our brains. So we're still using that primitive survival system, except there is very little threat of a saber-toothed tiger jumping off the street and eating us. What is the number one threat in our society today, in our culture, in your circumstance, in your environment? Number one threat, FOPO, fear of other people's opinions. That's big, by the way, because I want you to ask yourself what you would do and what would be possible if you literally did not give a shit about what anyone else thought. And I'm not saying that, go be a jerk. Like, you know, the rule here is be good human. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, what if you were like, I'm clear, I'm acting from integrity, going for it, no matter what. What do you think the likely probability of your outcome would be? Better or worse? So do a little thumbs up on your emojis. If you think it's going to make you better, thumbs up. If you really think it's going to, right, you're going to get eaten by the tiger, thumbs down. All right, so I see a couple of thumbs up. I see a lot. So it's not going to make things worse. It's going to make things better. But our brain likes to trick us into, one, we have a need to be validated. So here's a little crash course in human behavior for those of you who are men or women, which is pretty much everybody. One, little boys want to be validated. Recognized, you're awesome, you're good, you killed the cow, go you. Little girls want to be special. We want to be acknowledged. We want to be adored. We want, right? That doesn't change when we grow up. Big boys want to be validated and recognized, and big girls want to feel special and important. That's how humans work. So when we understand that so much of what we do is protecting and proving and hiding and defending, because we're putting up those shields to maintain our validation or our specialness, our enoughness in some way, shape, or form, we recognize that so much of our energy is being poured into a hole about other people's opinions. And I mean this with all love, you're just not that important. Nobody is spending that much time thinking about you. We are so hung up on what are they going to say? Like, how many of you have already made changes to your email, to your fees? Somebody yesterday was on Tribe, like, I let go of 200 clients. Who's done that already? What I call the white knuckle moments. Did anybody die? Betty, did the world end? Did clients freak out?
No. No. It was actually very...
non-event.
Yes.
It's so often like, how do I do surges? You just say, click the link, schedule a meeting. There's like nothing you actually have to tell clients for the most part. So when we think about this, our subconscious mind is stucking us all the time with those stories and belief systems, but our conscious mind is experiencing the ramifications of that, because we're showing up, spending so much of our time and energy being either striving for acceptance or overwhelmed because we have this set of standards that we think we're supposed to meet to be okay. And if we don't meet them, we just beat ourselves up. And then we end up these loops of non-productivity and we just beat ourselves up more. So that's the second factor. It's very real. So just check, like, what are you doing and why are you doing it? Are you seeking that approval or that validation? If a client says, Andrew, I can't believe that you would do this to me, could you sit there with integrity and say, I hear you and I understand you and I'm super sorry that you feel that way. And I still genuinely believe that this is in the best interest of the client base. And if that's not a fit, like, can you do that and not pass out is really the question. That's the work, by the way, because that's the thing we're all the most afraid of. The most afraid of. And I have had, I can't even tell you how many challenging conversations I've had with and on behalf of clients, firing wives, daughters, like, oh, you're drinking too much and your clients know it, like tough stuff. So I promise you that when you get clear on what you're really seeking, is it AUM and revenue or is it validation and approval? Is it Like, that's what you really want to get clear on. And then understand that your physical biology is very real. Your nervous system was designed in prehistoric times to operate this way. Social pain and physical pain are the same to your brain. Adam, having a client go, "What the hell are you thinking? That is an awful, ridiculous fee. Who do you think you are?" is as painful to your brain as like getting burned. In your brain, it looks the same. And if I said, "Adam, put your hand on a stove," or be in that situation, like half the time we'd be like, "I think I'll just put my hand on the stove," because that social pressure is so real. And so much of where your practices get hung up here is in all those compromise costs, those incremental choices and exceptions that we make, or not drawing and setting those boundaries and sticking to our standards that gum up the works, because we're so damn afraid to just speak our truth and let somebody else accept or reject it, because it becomes personal. And I love you guys to death, but if I mess up today, I need to be able to go home, look at my kids, and still be present, know that I'm a good human. And that was the work that I had to do, right? Perfect isn't the way to feeling good. Like, that's just a strategy. Perfectionism, control, you know, I can do it better than anyone else. Like, I can't, like, those are all just things that we tell ourselves to avoid the discomfort of doing the real work. So I'm going to pause there. Does anyone have any questions around the forces at work or how they're showing up? Anybody experiencing any of these things?
Can I just add about FOPO?
Yes.
There's a quote, or I paraphrase Churchill on this all the time, because it's something about getting older and realizing other people's opinions aren't so important. And the thing is, I think he said, when you're in your 20s and 30s, you care what other people think about you.
Yep.
And when you get approach 50s, maybe your mid 50s, you care less what other people think about you.
Yep.
But when you really reach maturity, you realize they weren't thinking about you at all.
They really aren't. If your client is like, "Oh my God, I can't believe this fee, I'm out of here." It's kind of like, and I say this with, it's like firing someone. Like, you're sick to your stomach up until the second that it happens. And then you have the conversation, and 5 minutes after they're gone, "How are you?" You're fine, because you've moved through the pain. So much of your challenges in your practice, which is why I started Limitless the way that I did, is not about the practice. It's about the personal perspective that you're bringing to the practice. It's about FOMO and FOPO and what if this and what if I get it wrong? Holy hell, what if you get it right? You're going to get it wrong, by the way. Adam ripped off and deployed. Adam, was it perfect? Never. I used to never do anything until it was perfect. And now I'm like, screw it. We're launching it. We'll make it better. Like, it's just so much easier. The hard work is starting. Better is where you go from there. And our brain stuck us on the starting. And that is your number one. Like, when you're stuck or stalled out, whether it's, what's my plan? What do I need to do? Or, you know, are my clients going to be okay? Or is this really possible? Like, that's the work. That's what separates high performers from everyone else, is they overcome those hurdles quickly and efficiently because they're aware of what's really happening. Like, oh, this is that white knuckle fear again. And you know what? 19 times it's been a non-event. So I'm going to do it anyway. And here's the path that I'm going to prosecute to do that with as much clarity and confidence as I can, recognizing that it's going to be scary at first, but on the other side of scary is way more success, and that's worth it to me. So it's really about managing ourselves in a way that positions us to actually succeed more and better. You all have a temperature chart. Like, if you were a thermostat, Andrew, your money stories, your relationship stories, you have like a condition set that says, this is work I really had to do, right? I agree. You guys know my story. I grew up in a trailer park, no money, bad stuff. You get to a certain level and you just kind of get to that level and then you bounce down and you get to that level and you get kicked down and you get to that level and you get kicked down. And I can't tell you how many clients I've had who are so successful and they hit a ceiling and they cannot get past it. And it's because our temperature set is, I grew up in a world, this is my work, no joke, struggle was everything. Everything was freaking hard. Everything. So when I find myself in that pattern now, I'm like, ooh, this feels hard. I have to stop myself. It's not that I'm like over it or I'm perfect. Like, I just know the work. Like, oh, here I go again. Like, I've been doing this hard work thing for a couple of weeks now. what am I missing? Right. It's the who, not how, it's the strategy. You know, Adam and I once had a comment like, hey, you've lost your service advisor. There's going to be some work. We got to dig in and get through, but how do we make sure that we feel good about it, that it's a temporary condition set and we're taking action, that we're not in reaction mode and we're stuck there. So there are three parts of you. We've talked about your unconscious mind, your self-conscious mind, and your biology. This is another view of that. And I really love this one. I wish I were an artist because I would just draw a meat suit. You are a meat suit. That's what you are. You're a flesh meat suit. And in that meat suit, there is a control center. It's called your brain. That's what it does. And somewhere around all of that, which science is really trying to figure out, this is where science and spirituality get really interesting, but the research says they're kind of very similar, so we can have that conversation another time, is consciousness. What is consciousness? Consciousness is energy, according to the science, but for you and I, it's awareness. It's the ability for Adam or James or Brian to say, the thoughts in my head are happening, but they are not who I am. That is a story. Oh, look, my body feels stressed out and I'm in reaction mode. I can stop that. I can separate the feeling from the being and sit in that space of awareness and say, I'm feeling overwhelmed. Well, okay, what's that about? So the meat suit, that's our biology. That's where that fight or flight gets kicked in. And your brain is what controls that. And the only salve for that is your consciousness. It is your ability to sit in that space of awareness and intention and say, what's really happening here? What's my state and my story? Why is this happening? What's happening really? What do I need to account for? You're a meat suit. It's not an elegant idea, by the way, but what I'm really trying to communicate is your body physically, right, is a biomagnetic energy thing, right? It's a meat suit. Your brain, we know this, is working constantly. It consumes 1 in 5 of your calories. I did some more research around this, you guys, at a resting state. So just to live, to wake up and exist, 1 in 5 calories. What happens if you're actually doing stuff? What happens in those stress periods? What happens when you're climbing mountains or flying airplanes, right? Like way more energy and calories. So owning your mind is the most important thing that you can do because your mind and body have this very deep connection. Harvard has a mind-body institute. Does anyone remember what the connection between the mind and body is? I've been teaching it to you for the last 2 months, even though it makes you feel silly. Breathing is the secret to connecting mind and body, because when you do those deep breaths, it de-triggers your nervous system, right? It destimulates it. It brings you into that stasis mode so that your conscious brain can kick in and have the all-important conversations that actually create material understanding and meaningful change. Does that make sense? Your meat suit with a control center governed by awareness. So when you hear me say that our results, right, that we create outcomes because we focus our attention, our consciousness through the lens of our brain, that's how we create. That's what we do. If we are not in charge of those systems, Andrew, what are we going to create? Reaction. Right. So I want you to get really clear about how much of what you're experiencing is based on your thermostat. What is my meat suit set to? What is my brain set to? Like, hey, if you grew up in struggle and you're wondering, like, why is everything so damn hard? It's not because it actually has to be hard. It's because you're hardwired to create struggle in your life. Your brain will put things off. It will procrastinate. It will put you in situations because that's what you're biochemically strung out on. Like, hey, I need this level of adrenaline and noradrenaline and cortisol in my system, because when I grew up, it was like a battlefield. Like those were the chemicals running through my body. Does that change the day you turn 18 and walk out? No. Or in my case, much younger. No, it doesn't. And our job is to understand that the meat suit is an important part of this, but it's governed by the control center. And when we take agency, that's the magic. Then we move into consciousness. We move to the top of that triangle and that trilogy, and we can impose our awareness in ways that allow us to take intentional, get those insights and take deliberate action to create the outcomes that we want for ourselves. So I'm going to pause here because I spent some time on that, but I spent time on it because it's important, right? The triangle, state, strategy, story. This is the, this is the version of that. You're a meat suit with the brain and consciousness. And your consciousness, by the way, is what you're trying to click into because it's what controls the other two. But for most of us, 90 to 95% of the time, the meat suit and the brain are in charge and the consciousness takes a back seat. And that's why you feel incongruence, because that's some part of you saying, this is not what I want. Pay attention. And this is one of the most important things that I can tell you. Feel free to write it down. Any persistent negative feelings. Now, if someone cuts you off, they drive by, you do your thing, and then you, like, just like the gazelle and the tiger, 5 minutes later, you're fine. That does not count. I'm talking about persistent feelings. And you, many of you have those or you wouldn't be here. When you have persistent negative feelings, it is 100% of the time a sign that something needs to be paid attention to. You're doing something that's not working for you, and your feelings, which is your body's way of saying, pay attention, good stuff, bad stuff, and we ignore it and we keep going. And that hustle culture and the grind and the I gotta do, you know, sleep is for the, you know, sleep is for the weak. And, you know, all of that creates a state in which we're not happy or satisfied and we can't do our best work and we can't build our best businesses from that place. Do we agree on that? All right. So I'm going to take a deep breath because that's how you lock that into your memory. Are you in control of your meat suit is really the question that I'm asking you. Right. That'd be a great title for an article, wouldn't it? Are you in control of your meat suit? Hey, what are the traits of top performers? These are the characteristics that as you take ownership of your mind, your body, and your consciousness, you want to invoke. Purpose. If you don't know what you're doing and why you're doing it, you are going to struggle. Whether you're in lifestyle or leaders, I can already tell you there are examples where someone's like, I've got these goals, but I don't really know why. Right? So you're just moving stuff from one side of the desk to the other to get the income number or the AUM number to go up. And that's not that it's not that it's not meaningful, but that's not purpose. Why do you want those numbers to go up? You want better, deeper, lasting, purposeful, passionate relationships with your spouse? Okay, that's something I can get behind. You want to be present and engaged with your children and help them feel validated and worthy and like you're tuned into them? We can get behind that. You want to make more money to just live a better life and give some away and have a great retirement? Great, we can get into that. But you need to know why the damn you're doing it. Otherwise, you are a human doing, not a human being. And if you are stuck so many times, it's because we don't have that sense of purpose and we don't then as a result have clarity. And when we don't know what to do and why to do it, we just do stuff. We get up every day and we repeat the same patterns of behavior because that's what we're hardwired to do. And we get the same result and we don't have those moments of crystal clarity. And that's, by the way, what contrast is for. All those uncomfortable feelings that you hate, love them. Why are they there? To tell you that something needs attention. That's why they're there. To create a greater sense of clarity, and clarity for the most part, because we're humans and we're a little bit slow, usually comes from contrast. Contrast often in the form of pain. This sucks. I would like it to stop. I would like to be present again. I would like more money. I would like to not do energy draining work that bores the heck out of me. Like, oh my God. Contrast, possibility, also a contrast. Oh my God, Stephanie and Adam and, you know, Steph Bruno, like, man, they're doing these amazing things. I want that. Now your brain is hardwired to pay 7 times more attention to the pain, the contrast, than it is the possibility, just so you know. But clarity is, what do I want to create for myself? What's standing between me and that? Mindset, methods, mapping, momentum, right? We're giving you the model. How am I going to account for it? That's the commitment piece. Is that top performers learn how to develop the skill. I promise you, they don't wake up lucky. They develop the skill of deliberate action, of follow through, of committing. And part of that is focus. If you're clear on what you need to do and what your 3 key objectives are this year, Brian or Elizabeth or Nick, does that make it a lot easier to know where to focus your time and attention? Absolutely. So clarity is so important because remember, you're focusing time, energy, and intellectual property, your think factor, that's your real value, in the container of your time. And if you don't make good choices about how to spend it, like, I don't care how good your mindset is, like, the laws of the universe work the way that they do. You can't be on email 17 times a day and doing your highest and best work. It doesn't work that way. So purpose creates clarity. Clarity creates commitment. Commitment leads to what? Deliberate action. I know what I'm going to do and why I'm going to do it. And that is my focus. Deliberate action, not doing lots of stuff, feeling good and productive. And holy cow, nothing's better. We started 19 projects we didn't follow through on, but we're going to commit to one this quarter. If change with you or your team or follow through is an issue, the most valuable thing you can do is pick one thing and execute so that your brain goes, oh, Andrew's got this. Like, this is not the same as all those other times. Like, we're in a different lane now. Let's pay attention to this lane, right? That's the habit shift that we're trying to create to get our brains on track with us. Productivity phenoms. Just a franchise, but I think you get the idea. Like, these people do not waste their time. They optimize it. And we've got the three that are orange we're going to talk about a little bit more deeply. Growth mindset, right? Always in the headspace of I can, I will, it can be better. And we'll talk more about that. And then third, protecting the asset. Anybody heard me talk about this? You are the asset. You are the asset. If you are not in your prime peak place, you cannot create prime peak results, period. End of story. The math doesn't work. And top performers hone their craft. Tiffany and Jared and Adam and my $1 billion clients, you know what they're still doing? They're honing their craft. They're like, what's the next level of this? That's why we have expanded in deeper lessons, right? You could go through vision or you can go through vision. And when you get to a team, you can then do strategic planning and you can do goals tracking or you can do managing performance at the next level. So when you're starting out, you want to put the systems that you need in place to just get going and move forward. When you're bigger or farther along or more mature, you want to use those deeper systems. But the goal is to hone your craft. What's my sales process? How do I say that every single time so that I'm showing up and communicating the best, most meaningful value, right? What do I say when clients challenge me? How do I lead my team and manage projects? Like, that's your craft, right? The art of advice is your craft. So we talk a lot about that, and the value retreat in March is going to cover that a ton. But the goal here is to understand that, and again, there's a lot of things that we could put on this page, but I've been studying this for a while and done a lot of research. And these are 8 things that if you do them better, it is inevitable that your situation will improve. And if you do them better consistently, right, it will improve faster because consistency compounds. So any questions around kind of these top performing traits before I go into a deeper dive? Does anyone have any questions? Good listening mode today. All right. So how do we become productivity powerhouses? 1, take agency over your time. We don't have lessons and many conversations about this because it's not material, but taking agency over your time is what aligns your actions with your outcomes. And 80%, and when we think about like starting and those compromises and overtime, like how it builds, consistency compounds in a good way and consistency compounds in a dilutive way. So if you were like talking to yourself 10 years ago and you were like, hey, here are the things that we did that we should not do because they're going to add up over time, what would those things be? Like, everybody drop one thing in the chat that if you get to go back 5 or 10 years, you'd be like, oh, I can never do that again. What is it? All right, let's see what we got here. I'm going to wait until I get some answers. It's the interactive part. You guys don't get to hide. Give clients, take one-off clients, make exceptions, take on bad clients, PETAs. I never clean my own toilets again. Yeah, I gave that up. I feel like I've mastered that. I need to let someone else take their turn. Exceptions on account size, keep an associate that I shouldn't, drink Coke, one-off plans. So here's the valuable part about this. You all already know most of what you need to know about what's working and what's not working. Why you're here is like, how do I change those habit loops? Right. So the time lessons are all about that, which is don't check your email. Don't be on social all the time. Block your calendar. Align your priorities. because that's ultimately what top performers do. They understand that they have a finite amount of energy of 86,400 seconds in a day. You have a certain amount of energy that you as a meat suit can produce to engage in that day. And we all know that it goes right, it goes down over the course of the day. So what are you going to invest your time in and to what effect? And that's the second piece, which is you focus on the few. We were talking about overwhelm this morning, and it's what do I do? And how about this? And what about that? And how about we get three key objectives for the year, whatever they may be. It might be, you know, build a growth engine. It might be leverage my time with staff and systems. It might be, you know, take control of my time. What are the goals, right? Hey, I want an annual calendar. I want, you know, to check email twice a day. Okay, how am I going to do that? Well, in Q1, I'm going to implement X, Y, and Z. In Q2, I'm going to implement surges. In Q3, as long as I've hit my revenue goal, I'm going to, right, go from a part-time to a full-time person. Like, it becomes clear when you're focused on the few things that are going to move the needle. But when we try to do everything, we get overwhelmed and we lose that clarity. So take agency over your time, focus on the few things. You guys know this stuff, but you also know that when you apply it, it makes a world of difference. It's just hard to apply. Three, do genius work. You all have things that you love to do. They're energy creating and they're revenue producing. And your number one job, as quick as humanly possible, is to put in place the people, the process, and the platforms to make sure that you do that stuff 90% of the time. If you do that, you will make more money. You will be happier. And you will do the best work of your life without question. And so it's all about what are the levers I need to pull to do my genius work. If you're smaller and you're starting out, that might be I do my own admin work 2 hours a day. You know, every afternoon I'm in admin time so that I start to create that divide. If you have a larger team, it's looking at your organizational and people strategy and saying, as we grow, what's going to be the best team and advice model? Is it going to be centralized or something else? That's going to get us there. But it's about making sure that you understand that you cannot be happy and fulfilled and energized at work, no matter who you are, if you are not the majority of the time doing energy creating genius level work. So much of the time in my coaching with clients, I'm like, they're like, I'm this, I'm stuck, I'm that, I can't. I'm like, what are you doing with your time? And they're like, this, this, and this. I'm like, done, just stop doing that. And everything is going to get better. And I know that sounds simple, and simple can be hard, but it's true. So many stories on Tribe already of I've stopped checking email. I let go of 20 or somebody let go of 200 clients. They've done this and they've done that. And it's freeing because I had no idea that I could feel this way and I could be this focused, right? That's what you're after. Four, to make all of that possible, they're deep delegators. They leverage their time and talent to the utmost with those people, process, and platforms that I am always talking about. And five, which we're going to dive into, is they live on disciplined diets. Does anybody know what a disciplined diet is? It is a governing system, a way of being. There is a way that I engage with prospects. There is a way that I engage with my team. There is a way that I engage with my work. On Mondays, I do this. On Fridays, I do that. These days, I'm in. These days, I'm not, right? I have a disciplined diet, a way of doing as much as humanly possible, because that frees up my energy to do the stuff. If I know that every morning I get up and I do my ritual and my routine, I don't have to think about it. I just get up and do it. If I know that I have a Steph Daily Huddle with Lisa every other day, like, I don't have to think about it. I just get up and do it. Your job is to put yourself in a place where your disciplined diets are so formed that you literally just show up and follow the system. I joke all the time. I just do what I'm told. I show up every day and I do what I'm told. I go to my calendar and I'm like, oh, that's what I do today. I have total control because I created the system, but I have no control because on that day, that's what I'm doing. Disciplined diets free your energy, mental, physical, and otherwise, to show up and be present and do the work that you're doing. So the more that you can build discipline around every area of your life, routines and rituals are a secret of all top performers, every single one of them. Growth mindset. One, welcome feedback. Feedback is your friend, even when it stings, especially when it stings, because it tells you where there is work to do. So if you can get in the mindset of, I don't fail, I win or I learn, it is a game changer for happiness. Because then there's no standard, no should, no lack that you're some story that you're failing on. It's I can, I did, I'll do it better, go me. And I promise you that in and of itself will change your relationship with getting off the dime and getting stuff done. Two, embrace uncertainty. This is where some of you are really struggling right now. Like, oh my God, I'm going through these massive changes. I have all these options. What am I supposed to do? All of this uncertainty, that's a strategy of your brain. And that strategy is your brain saying, this is overwhelming. It's okay. Everything's not that bad. It's all good. Let's just go with what we know. It's way more efficient. We use less energy. Might not be comfortable, but we can deal with that. Uncertainty is a sign of success. If you want to be more successful, you must get used to being more uncomfortable. It's your relationship with the discomfort. If the stories in your head aren't squawking, care that bad things are going to happen if you make the change, or that it's going to be so uncomfortable, it puts us in a much better position to move to step three, which is do it anyway. Like so much of what you're going to do this year, and then I hope you carry on beyond it, is you're going to do it anyway. You're going to hold that fear in one hand and you're going to hold your do it anyway in the other, and you're going to go forth and you're going to make it happen. Now, that does not mean go do stuff willy-nilly, right? Here we give you models, we give you examples, we show you how it works. But the goal is to not let the uncertainty, the fear, the imperfection, the control, right, the stories to shrink us so that we can be in a position to do it anyway, because that's how progress comes. In order to do that, we have to have a sense of self-belief, a sense of worth and capability, and that whatever happens, I'm going to be able to deal with it. I'm going to climb the mountain anyway. And our brains get us in these feedback loops of I can't, I shouldn't, I don't know how, I'm deficient, it will be bad. And as a result, we lose that sense of belief. And if you showed up every single day, Pam and Mary and Adam, and you were like, yeah, I can, and I will, I'm here and I'm worthy, let it in, bring it on. If you operated from that state 90 to 95% of the time, do you think that your experience would be different? And the answer is for most of us, yes, it would, because we're not operating from that success state, that sense of deep belief in ourselves, our worth and our capabilities. Like so much of what we talk about here at Limitless is calling into question those things, right? Yes, I'm worth it. My fees are worth it. People aren't going to all leave me, et cetera. So just keep in mind that old ways won't open new doors, right? Uncertainty is your window to the next level of awesome, if you can embrace it. And then this is the one that we really ignore, and it's super important, like really important, which is, I call it protect the asset. You are the asset. We are in a hustle culture. If you sleep, you're lazy, right? Awesome people like, oh, you can sleep when you're dead. It's going to be amazing, right? Or I work 10, 12 hours now. I did that. Yeah, great for you. That is not the goal. Not here, right? So what's your attitude about it? Like people with positive attitudes perform better by every single measure, which we talked about earlier, like by every measure. So if you want to do better, you have to feel better, because when you feel better, you do better. Like, so rule one is you wake up every day and your job is to figure out, how do I feel better? Sleep. Lack of sleep is not a brag. It breaks down performance across every measure. You all know this. Right. So if you're waking up every day with an alarm and you're doing the drag your ass out of bed, you need to really evaluate, am I getting good sleep? Am I getting quality sleep? If not, why not? Because that is what powers your brain and your body. Your meat suit and your brain need you to have good quality sleep. Diet. Now, look, we all love the stuff. I really do. Me and my French fries and my pizza rolls, it's amazing. Right? All things in moderation, including moderation, but diet actually matters. A 1,000 calories of broccoli and 1,000 calories of pizza rolls do not have the same effect on your body. They just don't. So we could talk a lot about this, and we'll talk more about it over the course of the year, but your diet is huge to your brain. Inflammation is responsible for 90 to 95% of chronic disease. Diet is responsible for a majority of inflammation. Stress is the number one disease in the world because it creates the symptoms in your body. Your immune system shuts down. Inflammation ensues. Stress and diet are literally the key culprits in the majority of chronic diseases that we face. And again, I know we all love our stuff, but right, good stuff in equals good stuff out. So to the extent possible, follow your version of, right, the 80-20 rule. Try to make sure 80% of the fuel that goes in your body is actually fuel and nutrients going into your body. And then only 20 of it is what I call food product. I tell my kids, there's a difference between food and food product. And food product's okay. You just got to know when you're eating food product because it's not real. It's styrofoam and it does absolutely nothing for you except bad stuff. It's the truth. It just is what it is. So incremental changes. I was just doing some research. If you cut out three servings of meat a week, just three servings a week, whether it's bacon at breakfast, a hamburger at lunch, a steak at chicken at dinner, all of your health metrics improve significantly, right? So it's not about extremism. It's about really understanding diet is a key to performance and how you, and longevity, which is something that's kind of important to all of us. Movement. You don't have to be an extreme athlete. That's the good news. You just have to move. They have literally done research that shows for those, right, the diseases none of us want, right? The Alzheimer's, the Parkinson's, all of that. You know what you can do to alleviate a huge percentage of that risk? Move every day. Not like do 90 minutes of blood-curdling HIIT workouts and CrossFit. Move. Walk. Take your 10,000 steps, right? Go up, I got my four flights of stairs. Like movement creates blood flow, and blood flow does all sorts of amazing things to our brain to keep it clean and healthy. It improves brain health. Exercise, in particular cardio exercise, is great for your meat suit, but what most people don't know is it's also great for your brain. It clears out plaque, it increases the blood flow, like all sorts of benefits of just moving. And if you can get into the cardio zone a few times a week, even better. So movement props creation of new neurons and it reduces the risk of cognitive brain disease. Like you just want your brain in a peak state. It is kind of your most important asset. So we want to do everything we can there. And then we're going to talk about this because it's a really big one is mindfulness. Mindfulness is all about, that's it, just focusing on one's awareness in the present moment. So I want you all to close your eyes for a minute. Take those three deep belly breaths that you know I'm such a fan of. And I just want you to do a body scan. What's going on in your headspace? How are you feeling? Are you stressed? Are you calm? Are you open and engaged? Are you excited? Are you nervous? And then do a body scan. Like literally, do you have tightness in your shoulder? What's the sound that you're hearing aside from me? So we're just going to do that quietly for about 30 seconds. That's mindfulness. You don't have to sit on a mountain for 30 years and own your way to perfection. You just have to own your state. Notice we went from wherever you were to hopefully more of a form of stasis, calm, centered, neutral. If you want to be happier and more productive, set an alarm on your phone to do that every hour. Because remember all the stories and all the systems, right? Like you've been, however old you are, that's how many years you've been practicing who you are right now. And if you're one of those people that feels overwhelmed all the time, that's because your temperature is set to overwhelm. If you feel sad and hopeless, then get your temperature set to that. Like no matter what you're at right now, that's what your temperature is set to. So mindfulness is how you separate from those stories and get really clear on who am I and what am I experiencing? And then that puts you in a space to take agency. And then agency allows you to account for things that you can then take action on to improve your situation. So mindfulness, which we'll talk about in a minute, can be any number of activities, but it's about being in a moment and space more than doing. And we have all kinds of stories that hang us up about why we can't, or that's hard, or we suck at meditation, or journaling isn't for me, or whatever it is. But what I want you to know is mindfulness, because it's becoming much more popular and more modern and people are aware of it, it reduces stress, it improves health problems, it creates mental clarity and product. Like I literally had a senior, I was at a conference, was it 2 or 3 months ago, and a senior executive came up to me and he said, at a big firm, and he said, could I talk to you about this mindfulness thing a little bit, Steph? And I was like, yeah, what do you want to know? And he's like, well, you know, meditation and mindfulness, this thing, you know, it's not really my jam. And I'm like, I get you. I got your number. And he's like, but all these other people that I know that are like super senior and wildly successful swear by it. Game changer. And he's like, so I'm just curious, like, how does it work? What, you know? And I was like, okay, totally understand. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. But that's what mindfulness is how do I own my mind and state? so that I have agency over my thoughts, my feelings, and my behaviors. Because if I don't have that, then I'm on autopilot and I'm in the sidecar and life's going to take me wherever it takes me, right? So that's where vision and clarity become important. And then this personal performance piece is what you want to lock into, because that's how you create those changes. So what are we hardwired for? We are basically three habit bundles, just bundles. One of thought habits, all that stuff going through your head 95% of the time is right, recurring autopilot. It's your temperature, your thermostat. Our behavior habits, I get out of bed every day, I lay there for an hour, I focus my time, I don't, I eat Twinkies, I don't eat Twinkies, I work out, I don't. Those are our behavior habits. And that all ultimately culminates in our business habits. Do we stay clear? Do we stay focused? Do we align resources with the right priorities? Do we kind of show up and wing it and hope it all works out for the best? We are hardwired habit bundles. High performance happiness is about understanding that we are hardwired habit bundles around those three realms, our thought realm, right? Consciousness, our behaviors and our habits, right? How we're thinking, and then ultimately how it's showing up at work. So if I were you and I were in your shoes and I were following you around every day and I could hear your thoughts, and I could watch your behavior personally, and I could watch the behavior, the operating style of the firm, what would I see? So I want you to write this out because I want you to get really clear. Are your thought habits empowered? Are they, yes, I can, I will, I got this, let it in? Or are they, I can't, I don't, it's overwhelming, I don't know how, where do I begin? Disempowered. Above the line or below the line? And then what's the most disempowering thought habit that you have? You can go back to the mindset and the exercises. There's a number of them there, but get clear on what's the most disempowering thought that you have. Two, behavior habits. What are they? If I came in and I watched Michael, Gary, every day for a week, what would I see? Would I be like, man, you're rocking, you're clear, you're focused, you're leveraging, great leadership, awesome sauce? Or would I be like, Michael, how many times did you check email today? Why did you take that call, right? Like, ooh, like, what did you say to him? And like, if you looked at yourself through that lens, what would you observe and where is the work? So we want to stay focused, right? So you might have fees or niches or things like that. But when you think about what we've covered, vision and clarity, time management and personal performance, right? And then action and accountability. Do we focus? Do we have systems for following through, holding ourselves and our teams accountable? Where's the work in your thought habits, your behavior habits, and your business habits? And if you notice, which you probably don't, but I'm going to clue you in, that's the model for the whole year, but certainly this quarter. What are our thought habits around our vision, our time, and action and accountability? What are our behavior habits? Oh, we check email 17 times. Let's create a solution. What are our business habits? Well, we don't focus. We don't follow through. Let's build a launch process. It says we have a vision, we have a one-page plan, we have quarterly meetings, we have weekly, like we're accounting for all of these habit realms in the models that we give you. Your job is to be aware of how it shows up for you, Michael, for you, Kara, for you, Barbara. What are the thought habits that are holding me back from high performance happiness? Not everyday average stuff. You guys are already there. You didn't come here for average. You did not come here for mediocre. You came here for awesome sauce. What are the thought habits, behavior habits, and business habits that are standing between you and awesome sauce? So I want you all to write one down in each category. Feel free to drop some in the chat, brave souls that you are. Just shout, shoulding all over myself most of the day, run the day or the day runs you. Let's see, what else do we got here? Does everybody have one thought habit, one behavior habit, and one business habit? Who's got one? Raise your hand. I'm going to have you share. Somebody share. Dimitri, one thought habit, one behavior habit, and one business habit that you can be working on.
Well, on thought habit is kind of my time in the morning, have breakfast and do devotionals. Right. So that helps to set the day. Behavior habit is, massive workouts twice a week and daily walks, mostly with my wife. On the business side, it's putting out contacts with prospects every single day.
Okay. So notice what he just outlined were three positive habits that he could engage or is engaging in that are aligned with or moving him towards the goal. Those are things that are very simple to track on your success shifter, your habits journal, by the way, right? That's how this shows up, is what empowers you and helps you and pushes you forward, and what hinders you and holds you back. Right. So the opposite of that might be I check email 17 times a day, or there's a story in my head that I'm an imposter and I can't charge these fees. When you get clear on that, that's the roadmap for change. Then we know what the work is. So it's all about understanding that as hardwired habit bundles, you own your mind, you own your habits. And when you do that, that's how you own your life. That's how you create high performance happiness, is you own these realms. And this is what Limitless is all about. So how do we actually do that? Because that sounds awesome, right? Yes, Steph, could I have some of that? And I'd like a double scoop, please. All right. So there's a lot that we talk about over the course of the year, but here are three things that you can invoke. We've talked about them, but can genuinely apply consistently. And you're going to see right? Your thought, behavior, and business habits elevate in ways that are positive and productive. One, the daily practice. Dimitri talked about it. He has his morning routine. He has his devotional, like the daily practice, which we're going to talk more about in a minute, is the single biggest thing that I would recommend to anyone who wants to have higher performance and happiness, because how you start your day sets your day. Vision and goals create the vision for happiness. That's the top down. But your daily, these routines and rituals, these habit patterns, that's why Atomic Habits is the number one book in the world. Right? Because it's the habits that we show up with that determine the experience that we create. If we show up and struggle every day, we can't create freedom. That's not how it works. It's not possible to get there from here. So the daily practice is typically a morning routine of some point. Some people are better at night. The research shows mornings are ideal. So we'll talk about that morning routine, right? So routines and rituals. Michael Kitsis wears a blue shirt. That's a ritual. Why does he do that? Anybody know?
One less decision
to make. He does not care about his sense of style. He cares about, I just need to show up. And like, now for women, I'm probably not going to show up. Like, I'm going to use my energy that way. I can't help myself. It's a disciplined diet. Rituals and routines are the secret to success. Greater health, wealth, work, and well-being. Top performers in every field have disciplined, deliberate rituals and routines. Michael Phelps won his last Olympic medal. I'll talk about this in a minute. You'll see him referenced. Do you know that he won that medal without goggles, swimming with his eyes closed? Most people don't know that. Do you know how he did it? Rituals and routines. Michael Phelps had a routine that he did every day. He didn't skip Christmas. He didn't skip birthdays. I mean, he was a man on a mission. That's clarity and commitment. I'm not saying you have to be that intense. And he did the same routine. He gets up, he stretches a certain number of ways and a certain number of times. He goes up to the board and he does like this thing in his head and he does like these little things. And he built up a routine and a ritual that was so strong and had delivered such a consistent level of excellence that it became the default. So he jumps into the pool for this Olympic, it was like one of his last races. His goggles come off as he tells the story. Now, is that a cool thing to have happen if you're in an Olympic race and you want to win? No. What did he do? Did he panic? Nope. What did he rely on? Because the default hard wiring was there. His ritual and his routine. He had gotten up that morning and done the same thing that he had always done. He got up on the podium and did the same thing he always did. So when he jumped in the water and his goggles came off, he went to the default. He just closed his eyes and he did the work the way that he had always done it without thinking, because the tracks had been laid. Not only did he win the gold medal, he beat his own personal time. because he closed his eyes and turned off his brain. And, you know, where's the person? And he just got in his personal flow lane and he crushed it. He did not win the race that day. He won the race every single day in the decade before when he got up and he did the routine. High performers are constantly evaluating and adjusting their routines. I adjust mine all the time. Change the calendar, change the routine, try this routine for the quarter. Is this going to be better? Hey, listening to subliminals right now, is that going to really help? I don't know. Let's check it out. Right? So that daily practice is incredibly important. Within that, when you think about habits and rituals, I call them daily promises. That's what your success shifter and your habit journal are. They're the daily commitments that you're making that say, this is what I've committed to. And remember, commitment, the Latin root of it means to cut off. That the Latin root of decision is the same. It means to cut off, which means to eliminate any other possibility. I will only check email 2 times today. I will. And that's the discomfort part, right? You're literally rewiring your brain. You're creating new neurons and neural pathways, and that takes new energy. And your brain is lazy and efficient and doesn't like to do that stuff. It's like, yeah, no sleep in 5 more minutes. It's fine. Gonna be fine tomorrow. Tomorrowland, the place where 99% of human potential lives, by the way. Tomorrow's always there. So the daily promises. And then if you're in masterminds, you should be in this routine, but the rest of you should be doing it as well. It's what I call the weekly review, which is at the end of the week, you should sit down, look at your goals, look at your success shifter. Am I on track or am I not? What worked and what didn't? Where was I on track? Where did I get off track? If you do that every week, Pam, what happens? Any guesses?
You have success.
You do, because you get tired of listening to your own BS. Like, you can't lie to yourself every week. Like, oh, I got distracted. Oh, I like, oh God, again and again and again. It just creates this feedback loop of great self-awareness so that you can say, how did I do this week? Did I do the 3 things that most move the needle, right? Aside from, right? Like, hey, what am I doing to make sure that I'm aligned? And we don't give ourselves those regulators, right? And a temperature, like on the thermostat, if we hit a certain temperature, right, it goes on or it goes off. We need to put those regulators in place. So the daily practice, the daily promises, the weekly review are the personal versions of that. What are they at the business level? All we're doing is creating routines and rituals. This is the advice model. We use 1-page plan. We have a vision. We have a business plan, right? We look at it once a quarter. Routines and rituals. Because when you have them, the tracks are laid. Where's the work? When they wanted to go from the East Coast to the West Coast, how much work did it take to lay the tracks? A lot of work, energy, time, commitment, manpower. How was it after the tracks were laid? Way easier, right? Path of least resistance requires you lay the tracks. This will be the work. Can you put yourself in the discipline of following these productivity? Like, can I get to a place where I use my time tools and I don't check my email and I don't manage things I shouldn't be and I limit social media and I only do genius work, or I'm on a track to get there that I feel clear about and I'm time batching and I'm doing meeting surges or whatever. It's like, if you're not doing those things as routines and rituals, it's going to be harder. The lift is going to be heavier. Don't do that. That's why we start with vision and time and accountability. So these are the bottom up. This is you personally. This is not the business down. This is how you're showing up as a person and a leader and how you're going through the process of making sure that your time and energy, which is your greatest revenue producing asset, is 100% aligned with the outcome that you said you wanted to create when you came here. So we're just calling BS on anything that sits in the space between. All right. Does that make sense? All right, any questions? Because I really want to talk about daily practice and we have good time, but I just want to make sure that if you guys have any questions about what we've covered, that I'm answering them for you. All right, I see there's a question about time blocking and batching. Time blocking is saying I'm doing this day. Now I'm calling in a nuance here, time batching. Like if you look at my calendar, I only do one kind of activity a day. I'm like such a prima donna about my time now. I'm like, why is there a call on a not call day? I'm supposed to be in my like sweats with my hair bun. I'm doing like, why is there a call? Those exceptions only happen rarely, usually when I approve them in advance, but that's how hardwired I am. Probably not a lot of you, but once in a while, someone will get a call on a not call day because there's a situation, right? And it'll be like 8 or 9 o'clock or whatever. And I will completely forget, because what am I hardwired to? 10 to 3, 10 to 3, 10, or in my calendar, things are color coded. So someone scheduled a call a couple of weeks ago, and for whatever reason, just because life happens, it didn't get turned from green to red. Green are work blocks, red is calls. I literally looked at my calendar and I was like, I'm good, I'm out. And guess what I had? I had a call, and that call was not red. And I was like, if it's not red, my brain is like, I don't even see those details anymore. Because my discipline diet is so hardwired. Wednesday, I'm not doing calls. If I'm doing a call on Wednesday, it is a deep anomaly, right? Because I have deep work Wednesday. It's my do it day. So it's not about whether those are the right routines or rituals. It's about having the ones that are right for you, which means you have to put the protect the asset, the personal performance front and center to everything you do, because you're the gas in the car. So daily rituals, mindfulness.
Thomas has a question for you.
Oh, please.
Yeah, so I agree with all of the time blocking and batching and everything else and setting your schedule and having kind of your ideal week. Like, what do I do on Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays? The challenge that I've had is, you know, one of my focuses is to build client relationships.
Yep.
So client calls and says, hey, I've got this tea time available. Can you join me, you know, Thursday afternoon? Oh, no, I can't. That's my phone calls day. Right. So how do you get back on track, and how do you deal with the ad hoc priorities that show up to really get back on track without being so rigid that you're not.
Right. So I'm going to do that really annoying coach challenge thing. Do not take it personally. It's all out of love, which is what I really heard you say is I basically want to manage my time around the idea that a cool client might call and ask me to golf. How do I do that? And the answer is you can't. Like, you can't. Now, what you can do, and this is very possible, is I have this rule in my world that time can neither be like matter. It cannot be created or destroyed, but it can be exchanged. So one, like, I have red days and green days. Red days are call days. Mondays and Tuesdays are red days. Do I have a lot of freedom on Mondays and Tuesdays to just go play coffee or ski because it's snowing? No, I don't. That's called a commitment. That's the commitment I made on that day. Did I set my schedule up so I have a lot of other freedom and flexibility? Yeah, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. If I choose to hit the powder and I want to work in the morning or at night or on the weekend to make up for my 5 hours, not a problem. I can do that. It's called flexibility. Now, there are times someone's like, oh, I'm coming to town. Steph, are you free on this day? And I'm like, God, I would love to hang out with you. It's a Monday. That's not an option. Can you meet with me on Wednesday or Sunday, right? So one, is that genuinely the problem, Thomas? Are you really in a situation where so many of those exceptions and awesome opportunities are coming your way that you can't block your schedule? Or is that one of those stories that we tell ourselves, like, oh,
no, it's not that it's so, you know, it's priorities, right?
Right.
So I say, okay, one of my priorities is client relationships.
Yes.
One of my other priorities is I've got to make sure I'm doing my prospecting calls.
Right.
But if a client calls when I blocked my time to do prospecting calls, do I say to them, oh, nope, sorry, today is, you know, prospect calls. I can't talk to, you know, because my priority is.
Well, first of all, you're never going to say that, right? You're not going to.
Right. I'm exaggerating.
I can't talk to you because you said prospect calls and that's more important today.
Right. No, I'm exaggerating. Right. But that's, you know, the way that it's been presented is you've got to protect that time, which I get, but not every week is ideal. Right. No, so how do you shift and move and still have the right priorities and get back on track to kind of this ideal week?
All right. So ideal is this idea, right? So we want to optimize our consistency because that's how we optimize our efficiency and our attention, right? So when I have a green day, I know, like, here's the zone I'm going in. So to your point, you can create flexibility. So if the client calls and says, oh, I'd love to go golfing with you on Thursday, you might have to say, in that case, I've got calls with other clients scheduled. I would love to get together with you sometime. I have a lot of flexibility on Wednesdays and Fridays. Let's look at the calendar and find a day. Done. Like, you're turning it into a now or never, right? And there's always going to be situations. I get invited to speak all the time. Like, oh, that'd be amazing. Can't do it. My calendar says I can't do it. So this is where, notice that the story is, Tom, you're just really trying to account for what about that thing I'm going to miss. So that's where the time model becomes powerful, because you should have time blocked in your calendar for prospecting and clients. You also said something really important, which is clients are my first commitment. Well, when you have a day and a time scheduled with a client, that is without question the commitment. Now, if something really unusual came up, like you could be like, hey, we need to reschedule those calls, but it's probably not for golfing with another client. So it's about disciplined diets. If you have clients and you know they like to golf and you take every Friday off, why aren't you reaching out to those clients and saying, hey, I golf with my favorite clients on Friday. I'd love to get, do you have a time this quarter that you can take a Friday and join me? Right. So it's about moving from reactive mode, like I'm responding and I feel like I can't create consistency because I must always be able to react, is very different than responding. I would love to play golf with you. Unfortunately, this Thursday doesn't work because I've got client calls I've committed to. Can we grab the calendar and find another day?
Okay.
See, you're just notice how your brain is locking into that story that you're giving something up. Something is being taken. Like, I won't be able to react and drop everything. Well, most successful people in the world don't spend most of their time reacting. Now, there are times when you need to, which is what that flexibility is for, right? If the largest COI you've ever had calls up and says, I've got a $25 million client, can you meet on Thursday? You're going to say, I have some client calls on Thursday. Would Friday or Monday work? I can make my schedule. My schedule is a lot more flexible. Or you're going to be like, oh, those calls are not a big deal. I'm going to reschedule them, right? But get clear on what the exceptions are. Our number one problem, the reason that this is also hard to implement, is because we don't set boundaries and stick to them, because our stories keep us from that, right? If Mondays are just these days, and like you see the results all the time. So just understand that you're all experiencing some version of what Thomas is going through. Like, well, what about this and what about that? And those are the stories that stuck us. Because as you can see, I just reframed it and I was like, everybody can get what they want. They just can't get it all on Thursday. And if it were that imperative, we could reschedule it. But what we're telling ourselves is we can't create these systems and consistencies because something is going to be taken away. It's kind of like we can't set a minimum or a niche because somebody's not going to hire us. Notice that lack and deficiency that shows up in our storyline. Does that help, Thomas? Tom, where are you? Okay.
Yep.
All right. So how do we stay in a space where we can create that awareness for ourselves when we're not on the call together? Your daily practice is your secret sauce, because that's where you recheck in with who you are, what you want, how you want to show up. And you do that by being mindful. So morning routines don't have to be meditation. If that is not your jam, or you're like, oh, I'm not one of those people. By the way, the more that you say that, the more you need it. That's what the rules are, but I'm not going to push. All right. So mindfulness can be anything, right? If you are constantly overwhelmed and your nervous system is constantly heightened, breathing 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes a day will actually help you rewire your brain for stasis so that you don't wake up in that stress state, right? So 5 minutes of deep belly breathing when you're on the bed in the morning is really easy because you can see your belly go up and down. That alone will help you start your day from a calmer, more confident place. Just taking 3 minutes is a long time when you're starting, by the way. So start with 3 minutes. Like literally, it's just belly breathing. Like that's a great way to start your day. Integrate it into your rituals, right? Set your alarm every hour or 2 hours, or make it a habit before every meeting or every phone call to do 3 belly breaths and really get centered and find that still place so that you're showing up in the best way. What's my intention for this call? How do I want to show up? So it's not just a morning routine. The best parts of morning routines is they show up organically in the rest of your day. Meditation is the favored way. It has the most benefits. Eight minutes a day is the minimum effective dose, according to research. You don't have to own on the mountain for an hour. I'll give you some resources if you guys want to check that out. Meditation is not about clearing your mind. I have just given you permission not to suck at it. The number one reason that people don't meditate is they think they suck at it. Because what does everyone think the job of meditation is? It's just to clear my mind, like a monk on the mountain for 30 years. And I've been doing that for 5 minutes and I'm fidgeting and I can't. And I'm like, I suck at this. And if you're an overachiever, perfectionist, control freak, you quit because you don't want to do anything you suck at. Like that's just human nature. So one, stop telling yourself that story. There's a woman, her name is Emily Fletcher. She's phenomenal. She does the CEOs of Google, and you can look her up online. And she gave me permission to meditate in a way that made me really happy. And she said, the job of meditation is not to clear your mind. No one does that. She said, the job of meditation, my words, are to own your mind. If you are sitting in meditation, even for 30 minutes or an hour, and you catch one thought float through your mind, and you're able to hold that thought without becoming it, diving it, and you're just like, oh, look, that was an interesting thought, and you let it go, you have succeeded at meditation. She said, Stephanie, they call it a meditation practice for a reason. And I was like, oh, I like that. Right? It's about practicing agency over our mind. Can we be aware of what's floating through it? What happens on a day-to-day basis is thoughts float through our mind, and we connect and engage with them. We buy the damn house. We're like, oh, what's that client going to say? Oh my God. And we envision it, and we imagine it, and we play it out in our head, and we worry about it. My God, we bought a house. We're doing landscaping. We're adding a room. And what we need to do is be like, oh, pass the sidewalk, keep on going. Thank you for that bit of insight. This is on my mind. It has my attention. I'll deal with that later. Come over here. So we'll talk more about this as we go over the course of the quarter, but the whole point of meditation is to create a space in which you are aware of what's happening in your mind and can learn how to observe it without owning it. Can I observe that I'm feeling stressed and frustrated? And can I accept that without letting my mind spin off for 20 minutes? And if it spins off for 20 minutes, this is gonna make you all feel better. My brain does it all the time. And I'm like, oh, I came back and I was like, oh, 20 minutes. I was insane. I was like, okay. And I caught that thought, go me. Let's put that on the side because it has my attention right now. I throw it in a little balloon and I put it off and like put it in a basket in the closet for later. And it's about rewiring your brain to not always be in reactive mode is what it's ultimately about, that you can show up from that place of calm and stasis more of the time, and that you can invoke that state at will. Oh shit, it's hitting the fan. I'm stressed out. And take a breath. I'm going to get back to that state. So it's about creating a precedent for yourself so that you have a default to go back to that serves you better than the default that you're using now. And those defaults are busyness. Those defaults are procrastination. Those defaults are email. So I get my dopamine. They're going home and having the drink. So you get your dopamine there, whatever they are. That's all a strategy for not having that space and stillness inside of us. And that's what we ultimately want to create with mindfulness or meditation. For those of you like me, Adam was this person too, with busy minds, journaling is powerful because it doesn't feel so like I have to get this quiet thing down. You can ask yourself, Adam, I think journal, I mean, he would post pages of journaling. Coben, if you're on the line, Coben is following in your footsteps. He's going to do amazing stuff. He's on there like, here's what I'm thinking. Why am I thinking this? I think I can do this. What about this? And so processing, again, it's a way of observing the thought without being the thought once it's out on the page. And so when you ask yourself a better question, you get a better answer. Liz Han, I was talking to someone in one of the calls, and I was like, here are three questions that you can ask yourself to really work on your stuff in your daily journaling. And Liz Hand's on her game. She's like, hey, Steph, I saw that post you did to so-and-so. You know me. Could you please give me three questions that I should be working on in my journaling? And I was like, oh, yeah, girl. Think, 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 and think, think, think. Right? If you need help, like, give me some better questions. Jump on Tribe. Be like, here's what I'm struggling with. We'll help you get some better questions. But journaling is a really powerful way to process what's behind the curtain without judgment. You just sit down and say, for the next 5 minutes, I'm going to ask myself what's really stuck in me, or why is this bothering me, or why am I procrastinating? And even when you're stuck, you're like, I don't have an answer. Why don't I have an answer? I don't know. I'm tired of, like, you just write. And if you do it consistently, at some point, Adam can probably verify, like the cork opens and the good stuff comes out and you're like, oh, this is what's really going on behind that curtain. One of my favorite things, you guys hear me talk about this, but creative visualization is basically laying new tracks in your brain. So in my morning ritual, I always visualize. When I sold my first company, I swear to God, so I was like, oh, here's what's going to happen. Here's my goal. Here's how it's going to feel. 6 months later, bam. I'm like, I don't even know how that awesome kismet works. creative visualization, your brain, this is scientifically verified, it's incredibly cool. Your brain doesn't know the difference between what's real and what's imaginary. Zero difference, just doesn't know. So Eileen Gu, who's in the Olympics, visualizes, they were talking about it, she just won all the gold medals, an hour a day. Michael Phelps visualized 2 hours a day. Conor McGregor, Lady Gaga, Will Smith, Denzel Washington, Matthew McConaughey, all really on board with the idea of high performance happiness, mindfulness, meditation, right? This idea of envisioning what you want. The science says that holistic visualization is what works best. And that means you're sitting down, that vision that you have in your head for your best business and your best life and how you wake up and how things are working. You want to see it, feel it, hear it, taste it, touch it. Like I get up and I'm like, my life is great. I feel this way. My husband is adoring me. My kids are awesome. I'm present. I'm cooking good. Like you want to literally work through that like you're painting the picture in your brain, because when you do, you are legitimately creating new neurons and neural pathways. And when they do the research, the same circuits in your brain light up. Your brain doesn't know the difference. They've done studies. They did a study on piano. They gave people piano music and had them visually practice it and had people really practice it. The people that visualized it is good or better than the people who really practiced it. There's a story in the book Peak Performance about Russian athletes back in the 80s who visualized. So one, they had four cohorts. One did 100% practice. One did 25% visualization, 75% practice, all the way down to 100% visualization and no practice. Guess which group performed the best? You guessed it. The group that visualized actually outperformed in those studies. They tend to do as well and often outperform because your brain doesn't know the difference. So when we talk about saying it out loud or what happens with client challenges or what do you like, if you visualize, oh, I feel like I'm going to check email, but I have that conversation with myself and I catch myself, you're literally laying the pathway to create a new and better behavior. And we've talked a lot about this in terms of movement. You want to activate and energize your body in the morning. You want to activate, you want to get your nervous system in a good place. You want to increase your blood flow. It creates mind-body connection. You can do active breath work. I do like a 5-minute stretch mini yoga routine just to orient my mind and body and feel like I've, you know, and I love the routine of it. Like, oh, this is just my routine. You can hike, you can bike, you can walk, you can do anything. The goal is try and get outside 5 or 10 minutes a day, move your body, like move it. If you have to walk around the block and do your, right, your thought processes, or you're climbing a mountain and you ask yourself a better question on the way up. It's about getting out, getting movement, getting sunlight. All the research says it's good for you. Vitamin D is very healthy, but when we are inside too much, which a lot of us have been the last couple of years because of COVID, it's depressing. Like you feel that down, icky state. So for each of you, it's different. Like when I have my calls with Michael Kitsis, he's almost always walking. I never actually see him on Zoom. We're just audio because he loves to move. Super high energy, right? Like he just has to be moving. That's what, like I doodle when I'm on calls, like listening, because my body needs to be moving. Like that's just how I'm wired. Like I'll just be taking notes and doodling and stuff because that's what my brain needs to do to pay attention. So we just find those ways to move that really work for us. If you're an ADD type and you have a hard time, I have clients literally set an alarm. You can focus for about 60 to 120 minutes. 90 is about where the research says. Set your work blocks in 60 or 90 minute increments. If they go longer than that, set an alarm to get up and walk around the building. Do a 5 minute, you know, just walk around the block, go downstairs. You need those brain breaks to keep your brain operating at that optimal level. If you just go for 6 solid hours with nothing, you're just draining those energy reserves. So mindfulness, creative visualization, get really clear, imagine it, see it, feel it, taste it, touch it, like, yeah, it's so awesome, I'm $1 million practice, I'm taking time off, like your brain will get on board faster and better. And then movement, right? Just keep that body and that brain, the meat suit and everything working at optimal capacity. So we really talked about 3 things, clarity, focus, and flow. When you have purpose, which is why you're here, if you're not clear on that, let me know, because that's job one. Everything is hard if you don't have clarity and purpose. So that you can make progress, you want to focus on clarity, all top performers are really clear on what their goal and the outcome they want to create is and what's required of them and the people around them. Never a question in Michael Phelps' mind or in Richard Branson's mind. Like, these things are just part of the normal customary. Two, focus. Get fanatical about what you focus on and optimize your energy to those actions. And third is flow state. You're trying to stand in that flow state or sit and operate from it so much more of the time. Even 10 or 20% makes a material difference. And then you get energy and motivation and inspiration to make the next difference and the next, and it's incremental and it builds. So I don't want you to feel like you're going to go from zero to peak performer. It's these series of steps that we've taken along the way that ultimately allow you to get there. Here are some resources. There's a resource list. I'm going to talk a lot more about my personal journey and the highs and the lows and how I use these tools in the fireside chat at March Retreat if you're interested in my personal struggle and success story. But it's deep and it's meaningful in terms of right where I was and how I use these tools to really create an entirely new level of success and possibility for myself that I honestly only feel like I'm just now beginning to tap into, which is really exciting. Headspace is a great meditation app. If you're into Australian accents, they've got a guy with a really good one. And I just find that really cool. But it's a great app for those of you who are starting out. It's like 5 minutes a day. He's like, we're going to sit down and we're going to practice imagining. Like, it's really cool if you're intimidated by the idea of meditation. For any of you, I know I'm on time, so I apologize because this is my favorite topic. I'm going to take like 5 extra minutes because I want to tell you guys about this stuff. Calm.com has an amazing selection of meditations, but I intentionally chose this one right here with a guy named Jeff Warren. My husband is an awesome guy, but I would not say that he's in the self-help category of humans. He's kind of like that, yeah, whatever you can, I support you wholeheartedly. You have fun being a better human. And then when you're a coach, right, you can't really impose coaching on your spouse. It's really annoying. So we should have one of those, like, what's this mindset thing in my relationship one of these days. But really, I just got to a place where I was like, okay, I'm going to do my work. And then if the results show up, then maybe you'll get interested. So one day, he's really into energy, by the way, but he came to me and he was like, maybe I should try this meditation thing. And I was like, don't act excited. I was like, okay, whatever. Like, if you want, I could 10 minutes a day, maybe. He's like, okay, I can do 10 minutes a day. So I went on a hunt for 10 minutes a day that would not ruin my husband's experience with meditation so that he would not stop doing it, because my husband is brilliant and he's like, everything he does has to be perfect or forget it. He's like, so I'm like, oh, we got to not make it that experience. So Jeff Warren has a 30-day, literally the course is how to meditate, and it's 10 minutes a day for 30 days. And it is my favorite. Headspace is awesome. But I'm telling you, they go through like, what's equanimity? What is your still point? How do you stay calm in the midst of the storm? And it's practical and funny. He's quoting Led Zeppelin. Like, it's so doable. And at the end of 30 days, my husband was like, this is great. We should do it again. Like, and then he would just start. He came to me. He's such a private person. He loves marrying me. He told him he married the wrong person for that. He literally came to me a couple of weeks ago. We were in our second 30 days. And he was like, I'm not present most of the time, like just not present, like in the moment I'm worrying or I'm stressing or he's a fixer. Like he'll be like, you should turn the stove on, you know, turn the fan on, cause you're going to make pancakes. So, you know, there's going to be, and I'm like, I think I can handle it. Thank you so much. I don't need you in here telling me. And he's like, I'm just helping. And I'm like, no, it's kind of a strategy for you. Like, he literally on his own was like, because yeah, really, right, Ed? He's like, I'm helping. I'm like, no, you're helping you. You're not helping me, because I've told you I don't like that, right? But you're future tripping on what could happen, and you're going to save me and our kids from every bad mistake we could ever make, but you're not, like, that's not helpful, right? So for him, it was just a process of like, oh, what's going on in my inner world and how is it showing up? And I don't know what it will be for all of you, but it just is an experience that I invite you to have. It's one of the most powerful things you can do for yourself. So if you're trepidatious, but you want something that's cool and very real and doable, go to calm.com and do Jeff Warren. It is an awesome 30 days. When you get farther along, you can go deeper. I use something called Brainwaves Player, which literally does binaural beats. So it's like, there's a lot of research around binaural beats and frequencies. And basically it's a 7 month. So it costs, I don't want to say this one's not cheap. It's probably like $70 a month for 7 months or something. But it's basically a 7 month program where they like steep you into deeper and deeper meditations with the frequencies and the beats. So that it, over the course of 7 months, it's kind of like the equivalent of 30 years on a mountain. And I thought 7 months, 30 years, that's a good ROI. I'm going with that one. So I use this one, love it. Creative visualization. One of my coaches, Lisa Nichols, if you YouTube her, she's literally the best speaker on the planet. She's amazing, but she has a creative visualization course with Mind Valley. It's awesome. Resources are on this list. And here are some of our favorite books, some of which we've already recommended. Obviously, Atomic Habits. Happiness Advantage is a quick read by Sean Anker. Great book. Abundance Now by Lisa Nichols. If you want help building a morning routine, Google. Oh my God, there's like you're not going to go wrong with Google. Hal Elrod has a morning ritual called Savers, 6 steps, S-A-V-E-R-S, if you want a model. My morning routine is another one. The most important thing here is don't get overwhelmed. 5 minutes, if that's all you can do, of 5 minutes a day, any habit that you instill in your morning, 8 minutes minimum viable product, but I'm going to give you 5, is all you're basically saying, Ed, Elizabeth, Nick, is you're saying, I own my space, my day. I own it. Not the habit mill, not the default, not the reaction. I own it. And I'm going to sit in that space for 5 minutes. I'm walking, I'm journaling. I'm going to own this 5 minutes. And when you do that, it's called a pattern interrupt. Whatever the routine is now interrupted. And that's what creates space for a new and better routine. So if it's 5 minutes a day, if that's all you can do, I every year have some guy call me up and say, I can't meditate. I can't like journal for 5 minutes a day. What happens every single time? Right? It might take you 3 days. It might take you 30 days, but there's going to be a moment where you find the thing that's stuck in you, or you find that flow state. You're going to learn how to tap into it. And that's the most powerful thing we can teach you here, is how to really harness yourself. So I know I've gone a few minutes over, but this is literally my favorite topic, because all of the other stuff that we teach you, barring vision clarity, right? The things that we've talked about in terms of setting you up for success, nothing that happens the rest of the year will happen as well, as efficiently, as effectively, or as enjoyably if you aren't showing up with new and better habits, thought habits, behavior habits, and business habits, because you'll be in struggle mode. You'll be in reactive mode. And that's what you came here to break out of. So I will end with my favorite Einstein quote, which is no problem can be solved with the same consciousness that created it. So I really hope our conversation today gave you more information and more insight around how to create that level of high performance happiness for yourself. And we will be in coaching calls, office hours, and on Tribe as you think through how to apply this lesson. Most important, don't get overwhelmed. Don't disengage. Find the one or two things that you can do incrementally, consistently to move the needle, because we know that consistency compounds. If you do these things or some version of them consistently for 30, 60, or 90 days, it is inevitable that you will feel better and do better. That's the commitment that I will make to you, as long as you make the commitment to show up and give it 5 to 8 minutes a day. So with that, thank you guys so much for your time and attention. And I hope that this has been helpful. Was this session helpful to you guys? Awesome. All right. So you're going to have questions about how to apply it. That's what Tribe is for. That's what office hours is for, to make sure that you're digesting, that you're thinking through it, and then you're really engaging where you need help, guidance, direction, or support on how to apply it in your practice. So with that, thank you guys so much for your time, and we will talk to you over the course of the week on Tribe.